Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, Ian, and it is dramatic return to network television. We got Mark.
Yo.
Mark says yo, and we are going to revisit for the Futile Podcast, Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood's 1990?
92.
Academy Award-winning revisionist Western. Just watched it on Blu-ray. I thought it looked pretty damn good.
I thought it looked awesome.
I mean, you know, I guess you pay for what you get with the Blu-rays. And
yeah, I thought you said that was a cheaper one.
It was a solid. Yeah, well, yeah, it was a cheap Blu-ray. I mean, I'm wondering, we had problems with the audio. We couldn't get it to register as a 5.1.
I'm happy to hear it was a team effort.
Yeah. Well, you were there to support me as I tried to fuddle with it.
I was being supportive.
You were being supportive. I appreciate it. So, I don't know. I mean, it's a quick plot. I could do it real quick. I mean, most people probably know it. Basically, Eastwood plays an old, retired sort of killer, bad man, bad dude, drunken,
a wicked man,
drunken, wicked, vile sinner that would run around killing women and children and doing whatever, and just through happenstance and luck.
Everything that had walked and crawled at one point.
At one point, yeah. Just is still alive, and you know, eventually some woman decided that guy was the kind of guy, probably like bad boys. You know, she's like, oh, I like bad boys. I can tame him, I can change him. And she did.
She did.
And they had a couple kids, and then she croaked, and he decided that he was done with that way of life. And then somebody comes looking for him, the old him, saying, hey, I'm looking for a partner to help me kill a couple cowboys that done cut up a whore. And
even her teats.
Yeah, they it was one of those sort of situations where it just was made to seem worse than it really was in terms of how awful the crime was against the prostitute.
Whore.
And then the B story, I guess, is the sort of more, I think, a more interesting story to me is the Gene Hackman as the sheriff trying to maintain,
as the enforcer,
trying to enforce his sort of own brand of justice or his own ideology of, you know, men with character or whatever.
Yeah, he's really not a bad guy.
No, he's not. It's a very it's a good character because it's really the kind of character you can really talk about a lot. You can really get into, well, where does he go? And I don't know, this is my second full viewing of the movie, and I'd say, I mean, it's probably obvious to most people, but he really turns kind of once it's the idea of the fame gets to him. Because once the writer gloms on to him after the situation with English Bob, then he starts becoming much more...
Well, he's a showboat.
Of a showboat ego guy. Yeah.
But you can tell he's not bullshitting the guy.
Nope.
Per se. Well, he's telling him what he thinks.
Yeah, well, he starts bullshitting more as it goes on, and he becomes more...
Yeah, you do get that...
His bravado gets higher, and I mean, it's like with Falling Down, with Michael Douglas, where he's not really a bad guy until at a certain point there's sort of a turning point where it's like, okay, now this guy's gone too far. And with Ned, obviously, that was just like a breaking point. I think one of the failings in the movie, and I've talked about this before.
Yeah, but he killed a murderer.
Well, he killed, yeah, but he beat Ned to death, basically tortured him to death. On the not necessarily on the implication that he had actually done anything necessarily.
You mean he was supposed to have a trial of his peers?
Well, I mean, you know, if what's good for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is good for Ned, I'm just saying, you got to read the Miranda rights to these people. I mean, they're given their full constitutional. You know, you don't want to get in on that. That'd make for a good. At least we should do another like kind of hardcore movie like this. I mean, not a Western. I guess he's done with Westerns. This was his last one, I think.
Yeah,
and the last one he acted in, and I mean it was a good way to go out.
It was. He did go out on a high note, but he really didn't. There never really was a low note
for Eastwood
on Westerns.
Yeah, for Westerns there weren't really.
I mean before that you had Pale Rider.
Pale Rider was
solid.
It was good. Yeah, I liked Pale Rider.
Before that you had The Outlaw Josie Wales. That was my favorite. In fact, it's kind of interesting. That was Clint Eastwood's favorite also.
I actually never seen that. We should check
You've
that.
You've never seen that one,
we'll,
Josie
We can bring that one over here sometime. We'll check that one out.
That one's epic.
Yeah, okay. This, well, they're all awesome pretty epic, movie. So yeah. I actually haven't seen all of Good, the Bad, and the Ugly either. I'm really kind of weak on all that stuff.
You know, I have.
I've seen like the end, but yeah, we got to do those. We'll do some more Eastwood stuff. It's good winter material.
I bought my Good, Bad, and Ugly just before I moved, and I never watched it.
No, well then bring it on over. We'll get it watched. It's good winter material as we finish off. It is good winter
material. You know, that's a movie that, and we're going off on a tangent, but it's all pretty much.
It's Eastwood related, Western related. It's good.
And that was always such a great movie. It's one of those movies I remember being on like TNT, TBS. As a kid, you're not feeling well, and it's like a Saturday afternoon or something, and it's great, especially on TV, because it takes up like 3.5 fucking hours.
Oh, yeah. Well, but that movie you have to see, they have to at least do show in widescreen, I would think.
You know, that one had a fatty, too. They all seemed to, and they all died.
That's what happens.
That was pretty bad. I think Tuco beat him to death or something.
Oh, my gosh.
He was a bit of an asshole, though.
That's usually the way it happens, too, right?
You know, that's what more Westerns are missing, is Eli Wallach.
I agree.
And we never watched The Hunter. That's one of the last movies I can remember him in.
Oh, the Steve McQueen? Oh, we got to watch that still, too, yeah.
Yeah, he's in that.
We got to restart it, man. We're back. It's back.
Yeah, for some reason, this Western almost made me think a little bit of... I guess just that revisionist Western. But I was kind of... They're just different Westerns I throw in that group.
Yeah.
Tom Horn was those one I threw in there, too.
Yeah, with this one? That
was a bit more historical.
Yeah, well, it's a big theme in Westerns, the whole sort of individual versus the society and what's right for the society. And so there's definitely stuff like that going on in Tom Horn. I mean... You know, they hire him. And then he gets fucked over because they don't know what to do with their situation.
Because they're political. And
yeah,
they
exactly. Don't
want and the same sullying their name.
The same thing is what's happening in Unforgiven. You know, where this whole thing gets overblown because both sides. I mean, you know.
And it's really interesting because the same thing was going on. A lot of that shit that was going on was really the same crap in Deadwood, mm-hmm. with things being politicized. Yeah, with Hearst. With government coming in and everybody kind of forming factions.
And Jefferson, you had Jefferson and you had E.B.
E.B.
Yeah. And Canned Peaches.
Man, he's one weird motherfucker. I always liked him, though.
Yeah, he was one of the Larrys in Newhart, right? Larry and Larry.
Was he?
There was like three brothers.
And he was one of them. You know what's crazy?
He's in Blade Runner, too.
The guy that played Skinny.
This, yeah.
He's done, he went way back and he was doing a lot of the, what the hell do they call that stuff?
Character actor stuff? That's what he is. I've seen him in some stuff.
That wave, what was that wave of movies called?
The exploitation movies?
No. 67, 66, 67, 68. Really gave a lot of. Gave Beretta his start.
You mean like some kind of like. Cool cop movie or something?
No.
It's a genre, some weird subgenre you're talking about?
No, there's like a name for all those movies where all the barriers kind of got broken down when the old studio system really kind of started falling apart. And they got in away the late 60s. From, was it the Hays? Was it the Hays rules?
Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
The code, whatever.
Yeah. No, I don't know what.
Oh, but anyway, I remember him in some of those old movies, you know, late 60s, early 70s. It's kind of funny. Because he always plays kind of a scuzzball.
Yep. He looks it, so he plays it. He's a character actor, you know.
But now he plays this queer guy that tries to rob Barry Newman in your favorite, The Vanishing Point.
Oh, yeah.
The Vanishing Point.
Vanishing
so
point,
he
yeah.
pulls over to help out these two guys, and they get in the back. And
you're just talking about that first round of independent cinema at the end of the 60s and the turn of the 70s. You're talking about Easy Rider and those kinds of
films. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I don't think they necessarily have a specific like genre category.
No, I thought they did. And we can get back to Unforgiven now.
Okay, well, back to Unforgiven
then. And Skinny
and all them.
There's some great names in this, though. Silky, Suki?
There's Slim.
There's Slim.
There's Silky. There's Quick Mike. Strawberry Alice. Quick Mike. English Bob.
English Bob.
Little Bill.
Little Bill.
William Money doesn't have he kind of has an alias.
The Schofield Kid.
Schofield Kid. And, WWW, obviously.
WW.
Probably reference to the emerging internet.
This is the only movie I've ever heard referenced to, but I'm assuming it was some popular term in the 1880s, John Bull, which refers to an Englishman.
As a John Bull.
And I have absolutely no idea what that means or why. Yeah. But that guy sure dug sand.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a different one.
Oh, shit. And then, yeah, the whole thing with old Rutherford Hayes.
Rutherford getting the...
Yeah, but he didn't get shot. No, it was Garfield. Garfield got shot.
Yeah, it was Garfield.
Which was right afterwards, I think.
So, I mean, what you really have in this movie is this... I don't know. It's a really good movie, but it's got certain... I have certain problems with it that I've always had in terms of the way that it colors its villain and colors its hero. I mean, you know, yes, it is the quintessential anti-hero in Clint Eastwood as this guy who is not doing anything necessarily good, or if he is doing something that is kind of morally right, maybe it's not legally right, and it's certainly, he's not necessarily doing it for the right reasons. He's not doing it out of a sense of moral obligation, but rather out of the practical concern that he needs to, you know, provide for his children, and he needs the money.
Yeah.
There's no compunction about him, and
now he's a cold-blooded killer.
There's no arrogance either, I think. I mean, he's
an old man.
Well, one phrase that he seems to use a lot in the portrayal of the character is, I guess so. People ask him things like, you know, the kid will ask him things, looking to see if he's, you know, looking, because the kid is, you know, obviously not.
Well, in a lot of ways, he's tried to convince himself that he has changed.
Yeah.
And he hasn't.
Well, I think that the biggest thing is that...
He started drinking whiskey.
That the change is not...
I'm sorry, whiskey doesn't turn you into a cold-blooded killer.
No.
He just had...
Well, he was drunk the whole time. So, I mean, there is sort of a sense...
That make him more reckless.
Yeah, it makes him... And that's sort of how he survived, and I think. And it was just sort of a nihilism there. But the big thing, I think, is this idea that he doesn't want to admit that not only is he... Yeah, yes, you are a cold-blooded killer, whether you think you've changed or not. But the idea that doesn't mean you have to be that way all the time. You know.
Well, he doesn't believe it either. He just keeps trying to convince himself.
But at the same time... There is a truth to the fact that now he's not as good with a gun, and now he does raise hogs, and now he does have two kids that he is, for the most part, pretty gentle and straightforward with. You don't see him, like, laying into them. And
his dear departed wife cured him of all that drinking and wickedness.
But the point is that, like, it's not something you don't really get cured from it. It's just you either do it or you don't do it, and it's a sort of one day at a time kind of thing in a weird way.
Well, you know,
and that's the thing he's having trouble with. I think that the whole movie is as he's going back into that.
He's getting a little worried about hell because he keeps talking about being scared of dying.
Yep, scared of dying, which, you know, is still there at the end.
Got all these awful images in his head that he can't get rid of.
He's got kind of a morbid fascination with people that he's killed in the past. And so, I mean, so that's him, and he's very sympathetic. You never see him do anything bad. You just hear things being told about the terrible stuff he did in the past, so there's no flashbacks.
Well, he made up for it at the end.
Yeah, you know, he took care of some people. And, more than five, I think.
Yeah, he might have tallied up
a few. It might have been the seven that, like, you know, the duck of death was...
The duck of death.
I said the duck.
So is he gay?
Who?
The duck.
Richard Burton? Richard Burton.
Richard Burton, is he dead?
Yeah, he's been dead for a long time.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He drank himself to death.
That's the way to do it. High five.
Did Liz push him to it?
I think probably. But he came back to her, you know, so that's the way it goes. You do it to yourself.
She was a honey back in the day.
Of course.
She's still alive, I think.
I think so. Still kicking around somewhere. I don't know, the conclusion of the film is just kind of, it's sort of reminds me of Clockwork Orange, where the character is this despicable human being, and he goes about and does all these terrible things. And then at least in the book, the last whole chapter is about him like growing out of it, and then he, you know, goes and gets a job and has a wife and kids and all that stuff.
That wasn't in the movie, was it?
No, they kept that part out.
But I didn't read the book.
I think because it would have colored. I mean, because it sort of gives you a different take, which is in Unforgiven, is that, you know, well, he goes and he did all of this, and then, you know, he met a woman and she changed him of his ways, and then he went back and he did some more of it, and then he turned around, then he went with his kids and he went and started a different job. You know, he's just a man living his life.
I haven't seen that since high school.
Clockwork Orange. I've got that. We can watch that soon. It's definitely kind of
weird to watch that now. A little of the ultraviolence.
A little ultraviolence, In and Out.
A little of the In and Out, a little of the Ludwig von.
Oh, yeah. Can't let
I just remember the big dick. Didn't somebody get beaten to death with some dick?
A giant phallic. Giant phallus of some kind, yes.
Oh, God.
It happens to the best of them.
He's still roaming around. I enjoy his work.
Malcolm McDowell?
Malcolm McDowell. You need to watch the new Halloween. One of these days.
I'd like to watch the original first, because I've actually only seen parts of the original.
I've talked about it before, but, and now we're way, way off, but it's all right. It's been a while.
We'll cut it, you know, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that I forgot about you with the...
Well, you do.
With the fist.
You do occasionally, you want to make sure, people are tuning in wanting to listen to a certain thing, you know? But you know, they listen
if
to the characters,
watching,
too. They listen for the characters, you know?
The characters.
The characters that are you and I, yes, talking right now.
No, but it was a great remake, and one of the things that made it good was definitely Malcolm McDowell. And I was also a big Donald Pleasance fan.
Yeah.
But
it was like Donald Pleasance couldn't say no to playing certain characters like that back in that period, right?
Yeah,
he 70s went through, and 80s, yeah, he was just all over the place. He was in Puma Man. Of course.
He did, well, you know the story how he did Halloween originally was because of his daughter.
Because of his daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like as a cautionary tale to...
No, because his daughter had seen Assault on Precinct 13.
Oh, yeah, and said, this is a good movie.
And liked John Carpenter, and so he actually talked to him, That was really the only reason they were able to get the movie released, because Donald Pleasance
was the only real name. Yeah.
He actually had a name, but it took a good chunk of the budget.
You pay for the big star, and then that usually can get you in festivals and stuff. These days, at least, is the thing. If you have a face, you have a name, someone recognizes, someone knows, then it's a little more marketable. Right. You know, otherwise, it's just shoot the moon and hope your story catches some fancy of something. I don't know. It's frustrating and frightening and an existential dilemma and all that other fun stuff. But
you're talking about the nihilism. I think you need to delve into that more.
Oh, with Eastwood? Yeah. Well, that's... I mean, because the writer tries to figure it out at the end.
And the chick he was banging at that time, old Strawberry Alice.
He was banging Strawberry Alice in 92?
Yeah.
Wow, all the way up till 92, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, he always kept one of them in his movies, it seems like.
Yeah, they were still together at that point. I didn't realize they had been together for a long time before that.
Probably. But, the writer tries to figure out, like, was it, you went for the, you always go for the fastest draw first, right? You know, like, there's a logic to who you shot and how you shot people, and he's kind of like, no, I just kind of got lucky, you know? That's kind of been the way it's been for me.
That's one of those great lines.
Yeah.
I've always been lucky when it comes to killing folks.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm not dead. And that's just one of those truthful statements. It's like all this dramatizing of war or of killing or of sort of the noble savage.
Well, some people just go straight up crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they just get lucky.
Yeah, that's the case. But that's really the case with anyone that survives, you know, real combat like that. Is a lot of it is just... You're just in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the right time. It's not a strategic issue.
There are survivors and there are guinea pigs.
That's true, too, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, the old question of who, you know, what rat survives the sinking ship.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just break down.
Yeah. I mean, you see that in this, too, with the kid who, after killing the one guy on the shitter, you know, just is kind of like he's done. I'm never going to use this again. I'd rather be a blind a blind live man than, you know, a dressed up dead one, you know, like, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword, that kind of stuff. You know, hell of a thing killing a man, take away all he is and all he ever will be. I mean, there's some great lines in the movie, and that really just kind of makes
it. Well, that wasn't the line.
All he has and all he ever will have, or something. There you go. Oh, okay, then. I'm sure that there were different versions. Up at take two, take three.
Yeah, I wonder about that. You were saying old one take Clint.
He likes to do things that way, I've heard. Is he keeps things real quiet, and then he just moves along quickly. I mean, really, if you think about it, he's managed to do two movies a year, even at his age. He did Changeling before he did Gran Torino, and that was in the same year.
I have no desire to see that.
Yeah, I don't either, but that's a period movie. That's like a full-length,
real-looking movie. He does a lot of period movies.
But, I mean, yes, I mean, what makes it an objectively good movie, something like Unforgiven, is these themes and these ideas that are portrayed in these characters. What some people could roll their eyes at or whatever is that things are sort of so bold-faced and on it. And there's a decent bit of humor in the movie, too. You know, he can never get on his horse, and that's kind of funny. And the whole thing about trying to shoot the can is funny. But
whores getting cut up.
Whores getting cut up. About that. Always a riot. Always a riot.
And weapons.
Weapons, yes. Yes.
There's lots of beatings, too.
Kickings. And crawlings. I mean, it's very, I don't know, Eastwood is kind of, I don't know, I like him because he doesn't really stray away. He doesn't try to be too clever with certain things, you know? He just goes with it. He just says, I mean, in a way he's kind of obvious about certain things. And you know what? That not overthinking it and just doing it is kind of cool. Like, he has the William Money character crawl out of the saloon after he's had the fight, had the shit kicked out of him. Like, as a sheer, like a whole metaphor for the fact that he is just, like, pathetic and beaten down. And it's just this extreme, like, difference between his exit and his entrance at the end, you know, in terms of where he is, rather than trying to do something more clever. I mean, a lot of people would be like, well, that's so obvious. Do you really want to like have him crawl? And then characters just say certain things, you know, they talk about the nature of killing a lot in this movie, rather than trying to find sort of, you know, artistic symbolic ways to convey that. It's just, you know, these are, and that's authentic, I think, to the kinds of characters that they're portraying. They're not, you know, they're talking about things plainly.
Yep.
And, I mean, just, in this case, I noticed in this viewing of it, one thing I really liked is after he shoots the first guy in the gut, and they're sort of waiting for him to die to kind of confirm the kill, and they're getting the water and everything, there's a shot where Eastwood's just kind of like looking away, and he just kind of like looks at the rock, and he just kind of picks at a piece of the rock, crumbles off a piece of rock where they are, and he just kind of throws it on the ground. And it's just kind of a, almost like a Marlon Brando kind of thing, where, you know, it's just like just something to just do. You know, he's not bored in the scene. It's not what it is. It's like a reflective thing. It's like a nervous thing. It's a thoughtful thing. And I mean, to me, that bit of performance there is just, it's golden. It's what it's all about, because you can see that guy has really arrived after all the killing he has done, and just now returned to killing, first time in 11 years, is pondering those other killings and kind of ashes to ashes, you know, all those sorts of things. So, I mean, though the movie has the plain speaking, and it has sort of some of the obvious things happening in it, that are just like, they hit you right where they are, and they're not trying to be, it's not overly clever. It's also got those little things that you look for and you notice that make it really good. So, I mean, you know, I got no qualms with this winning an Oscar. It's not one of those huh kind of movies to me when I see it. Any final thoughts on Unforgiven?
Well, I highly recommend it. Not necessarily for children. And it definitely has, for the time, and you got to realize this was 18 years ago now, but it took a different spin on violence. And I don't think it was so much preaching, and that's part of the reason why I like it. It was just a different take from a different perspective of maybe growing older.
Definitely.
And I also like somebody. I like heroes to a certain extent. It's nice to have somebody to root for. But if not, it's nice to have interesting characters. And these are just not characters you see every day. Definitely not garden variety. I mean, Little Bill shit could have his own movie. And they were just in his interactions with English Bob. And the deconstructing that romanticism of the West
that they sort of they explicitly do with the writer character and with
a little bit. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting some of the truly famous characters in the Old West and how much of what I don't just common knowledge is bullshit, because a lot of it, some of those people had their own writers, mm-hmm. like say somebody like Wyatt Earp, and would feed into this
the mythology.
Yeah, I was thinking salacious, but
yeah, I mean, I would say that in a pretty accurate way, it's for Eastwood. I mean, it's, so few people I think have managed to quite get this, where they do a sort of a series of movies that are based on a collection of themes, like Eastwood with his westerns, and then they finally just do one, and then that's it, and it's like, and it's perfect, and it's just like, you know what, that's it, you're done, you're right, you've come to the conclusion of all, you've dealt with all these themes in other movies and in other ways, and there's been similarities and there's been differences, and these ideas have played out, and we've seen some of these characters before, but we haven't seen some of them also. And then you get to something like Unforgiven, and it's like, it comes to a head, and it culminates at that. And that's like the peak, the pinnacle. And in a weird way, it's almost like if Unforgiven, like, closes the book on Westerns. You know, it's like, well, yeah, they can make Appaloosa, or they can make, you know, a remake, 310 to Yuma, and things like that. But or the Proposition. I mean, there's still other types of Western types of movies that can be made. But I mean, Unforgiven kind of just kind of closes the book on it. It's like, you say that's not for children. I agree, but I'm inclined to say that it's definitely almost the kind of movie that I would show to, like, to a son or something right around the, like the 14 age, you know, right around 14, you know, kind of like, well, because it deals with that.
Don't cut up no whore.
Don't cut up whores, and, you know, killing is not a glorious thing, you know. It's a, it just haunts you.
Because you gotta teach all 14.
I would show my 14-year-old that movie.
So you don't end up in the Southside Locos.
Yeah, and the Vatos.
And the Los Zetas.
Yes.
All that shit.
Don't want any of that stuff. And any of the characterizations of gangs from Walker, Texas Ranger
no,
to come
no
after.
Banging.
No. I would show him that movie, and then I would show him that prison sci-fi movie with Ray Liotta, where they're on that world. It's like a prison world.
I don't think I saw that.
It's a good...
I did see Deadlock, though.
Yeah,
with Rucker Hauer and
nice. Mimi Rogers. That's the one with the collars.
With the collars,
nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think Woody Allen did the same thing for his sort of genre of like neurotic New York writers with Deconstructing Harry. To me, I think he's done movies since then that are kind of sort of similar, but it's like Deconstructing Harry.
All his movies are similar.
Is the epitome of like putting a head on those kinds of movies that he had done up till then. I don't know. I'm curious. I think Charlie Kaufman did it rather quickly with Synecdoche, New York, because a lot of Charlie Kaufman stuff has been very, I mean, emphasis on sort of a meta storytelling angle, you know, where it's like a writer talking about a story that's in a story, and it gets kind of confused. Like Adaptation, obviously, was, you know, like that. And in Synecdoche, it's the epitome of that. I mean, so I think that theme is kind of at rest. And I mean, to me, I don't know. That's...
I didn't bring up Last Action Hero.
Last Action Hero was another meta story for sure. Deconstructing the nature of heroes and villains. And
whatever happened to F. Murray Abraham?
F. Murray Abraham was in Sci-Fi Channel original movie Blood Monkey here a few years ago. He won an Oscar for Amadeus. Everyone knows that. He played Ruato or something in Star Trek Insurrection. I don't know. He was in Surviving the Game, Ice-T.
Ice-T, again, Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer was great in that.
He pops up a lot.
Rutger Hauer.
I was hoping he'd pop up more.
Well, he was in Batman. Batman
Begins. Batman, and he was in Sin City. But
oh, that's right. I forgot he was
in Sin City. Neither one was his role big enough to punch.
But your Hauer hunger?
My
Hauer
hunger.
Your Hauer hunger is how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, you son of a bitch. Nice, John, practice.